Hello, and I'd like to welcome everyone back to the fifth shiur in Sefer HaChinuch, the 613 mitzvot, and how they affect your life. Today we'll be discussing two different mitzvot, the seventh and the eighth, Shelo le'chol ha-pesach na'ushal, not to eat from the Pesach offering if it is rare or it has been boiled, and the eighth mitzvah, Shelo le'hotir mevasar ha-pesach, not to leave over from the Pesach offering to the next day. So beginning now with the seventh mitzvah, Shelo le'chol ha-pesach na'ushal, that one should not eat from the Pesach offering if it is rare or it has been boiled. Ki im tzeli esh. In other words, it needs to be, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, it needs to be roasted. Shne'emar al tochlu mimenu na'uvashel. As it says, a person should not eat from it if it is rare or it has been boiled, and it has been cooked in water. It has to be roasted. Now, in terms of the definition of what exactly cooking is versus roasting, it basically boils down to wet versus dry. That when you're talking about any sort of cooking which is dry, it can be referred to as either as baking or as roasting. Things that are cooked wet are called, in other words, that's called cooked or mevushal in terms of Lashon HaKodesh. It happens to be that there is a third category which can sometimes move one way or the other way. That is the case of something which is fried. If something is fried in a great deal of oil, in that case, that it's boiled, meaning it's actually cooked inside the oil itself. If, though, something is cooked with no oil, for example, in a nonstick pan, that ends up being a situation where we call it a form of roasting, in other words, pot roasting, pan roasting. In other words, it's only cooking in its own juices, in other words, on the actual metal, the heat of the metal itself. And that has various different implications in terms of halakha, and in terms of what, in fact, the person is allowed to eat on Pesach night. This is various customs regarding whether or not a person is able to eat roasted foods or not, depending on the custom on the night of Pesach. Most people not eating roasted foods, and that means to see again dry cooked. In other words, if something is cooked with liquids and so forth added to it, it's no longer considered to be dry cooking. That's not considered to be roasting anymore, but a form of bishul. Even though it's taking place in a roasting pan in an oven, the fact that you have it basting and sitting in a pot filled with liquids, and there's some sort of broth that you prepared for it, actually forms some sort of cooking. It also has various implications in terms of the halachot of Shabbat. For example, there's a concept that says ein bishul achar bishul, that there's no cooking after cooking. That means to say that there's no situation where you can have boiling right after boiling. Shebasar sheitchil bo maaseh haur v'nitzla ma'at v'ein ro'oi le'achilat adam adai nikra na. Excuse me, I skipped a line, so let's go back for a minute. Ha'inyan hazeh shelo yuchlo oto kodem gemar bishlo afilu b'tzli, v'zeu perush na. So the matter of this particular mitzvah is that the food should be fully cooked, even in the case of roasting. In other words, and that it shouldn't be na. In other words, and what is the idea of na? Now we're translating here as rare. Shabasar sheitchil bo maaseh haur v'nitzla me'at. And this is a case where the flesh has been put up on the spit, and there on the spit, it has begun to cook from the power of the furnace, but only a little bit. Veneroi la'achilat adam, it still hasn't come to the point where it's edible by a person. Adai nikra na, that is called raw. That is called, rare. In other words, this idea of na. And that is, in fact, what is forbidden from the Torah in terms of this particular mitzvah. So, in general, though, the idea of raw meat, for most people, this is repulsive. Nevertheless, the question is, in terms of its kashrut, it's an interesting question. People might think that raw meat is a problem, since we know that the Torah forbids blood. Blood, as a prohibition for the Jewish people, is specifically blood that flows like water, meaning it's flowing blood, blood that is moving. So therefore, if you have stagnant blood, if you have blood that is staying in one place, it's not a problem. So what does that mean practically speaking? It means to say that if a person was to go ahead and he was to take a piece of completely raw meat, in fact raw meat that hasn't been kashered, meaning that salt has not been applied to the outside of it in order to draw out the blood that's inside of it, that as long as the outside has been cleaned, meaning that there's no liquid blood standing on the outside of that piece of meat, it actually is permissible to take a chunk of that meat and to throw it in one's mouth and to eat a completely and totally raw piece of meat. And the reason is because the blood that's inside is not blood that flowed, it's not blood that moved and that is outside of the meat or has moved from place to place even within the meat itself. So here the idea is not that raw meat in general is actually asur, but specifically regarding this mitzvah, there's an idea that meat which is raw is, in other words, meat which is even rare, meaning it's been cooked but only slightly, is something which is asur, something which is not allowed for the sake of Pesach. There's a general concept regarding cooking called machal ben rosai. And I think that understanding this concept momentarily now will help us to understand the fundamental logical underpinnings of this mitzvah that are discussed later on by the Chinuch. And it says that the idea of machal ben rosai is, it literally means the food of someone named ben rosai. Now, who is ben rosai? It says that he was a criminal, and what happened is he wouldn't be able to stay in any one place for an extended amount of time. So what he would do is he would begin cooking his food, and when it got to somewhere between 30% and 50% complete, or a little more than a third to half cooked, at that point he would go ahead and eat his food quickly, and then he would go ahead and run off. So this is the idea that there's a certain minimum level where food is considered to be edible, and that's this status of called what's machal ben rosai. It's a bit of an argument as to whether or not, again, what is the exact measurement, and therefore various different halachot will use either the smaller or larger measurement based on whether or not we're talking about rabbinical laws or we're talking about Torah laws and so forth. Now, the whole idea in general of cooking food, and the key here, in other words, is that food, and everything for that matter, needs to be brought to its completion. If you recall back when we were learning the mitzvah of milah, that there's an idea that man comes into this world imperfect, and that his actions upon himself, meaning by his performing a brit milah on his children or himself later on in life if it wasn't performed for him, that idea of coming into the world imperfect and we being the means of completion was taught from that mitzvah. Here's a practical example of that idea, meaning the idea of cooking food in general, in that you come to this world and you have a job to do, you have something to perform that contributes to the world. So a piece of food that's taken in its raw state is magil, it's disgusting, it's not something which a person is going to eat, it's certainly not somebody who is of any good character. I mean, even when you're dealing with something such as beef tartar, it's actually a marinated form of beef, at least from what I understand. Therefore, the marinade itself has actually brought it to a form of cooked state. But when we're talking here, though, is that the idea of not being animalistic, meaning just walking through the world and just taking and making use of whatever is before a person, but rather the idea here is that a person needs to take what the world offers it and it needs to elevate it. When we say elevate, it would mean to take what is there for the purpose of giving, for the purpose of making use of it for a higher order, for something greater. So a person takes the food and he fixes it, meaning he takes it from its raw state and he performs some action to it that elevates it. He makes the food into something which will give him vitality in order that he should be able to learn Torah, in order that he should be able to do mitzvot. He prepares the food in elegant and fantastic ways in order that he should be able to savor juicy, delicious flavors on Shabbat, in order to give a certain sense of honor, a certain onig, a certain joy on that special day. And the idea is with everything that that's the case, that the raw materials of the world stand in our hands and it's our job to make something of them, to push them and bring them beyond their base level. So when it comes to Pesach, which is connected, as we said, to the mitzvah of a chodesh, in other words, the very mitzvah of establishing the Rosh Chodesh and then moving on into Pesach, this very forefront of the world, which is the Jewish people, that they in particular have this very special purpose of elevating the world, meaning of taking the raw materials of the universe and investing within them spirituality, investing within them Torah, investing into it something special. So here specifically on Pesach, here specifically on the very holiday of the formation of the Jewish people, that specifically here the idea of cooking comes into place, the idea that the food has to reach a complete and pristine state by virtue of the very actions of the Jew himself, by his preparing it and cooking it. So, continuing on with the chinuch, aval kashehu chai legamre, shelo hitchil bo haor klal. Now, if it's completely raw and there hasn't been any sort of influence of the fire at all on it, in other words, it hasn't contributed at all to cooking, en bichlal lav. This is not included at all in this specific mitzvah that we're talking about. Well, meaning it's not included within the specific details of what we have here. In other words, you wouldn't receive malkut for the fact that you should not eat it rare. Aval asur midoraita, but nevertheless the Torah forbids you from doing so. Shekol she'en otzeri esh osra Torah dvar derech klal. Meaning in general the Torah says you're not to eat this meat. No, this meat needs to be eaten roasted. So therefore by stating that it's roasted, some sort of tikkun, some sort of completion to this meat, something needs to be done to it. Now if you haven't done anything to the piece of meat, meaning it's a piece of raw flesh, then essentially you haven't done an act, there's ein bo maaseh, there's no action involved here, and it is not allowed from the Torah, but it is not connected to the specific law, to the specific mitzvah lo taaseh, specific negative commandment of thou shalt not eat this rare or boiled. And in this case, of course, is because it's neither rare nor boiled, it's just raw, but it isn't allowed from the Torah itself. Uferush bashel. Now, when it says that cooked, shibishlu b'mayim o b'chol mashke o b'mei perot, it means to say that it's been cooked in any form of liquid, be it water, be it some sort of liquid drink, or for that matter, fruit juice. Shneimar uvashel mivushal riba akol. The Torah makes use of a language. In other words, it's usually translated uvushal mivushal, and you shall surely cook. Or in this case, in other words, it shall surely not be cooked with water. The double language in Hebrew comes to teach us what's called a riboy. In other words, that it should be more inclusive and therefore include more things. So therefore, any form of cooking with liquids, meaning by actually having it cook within some sort of liquids itself, in other words, external to it, in other words, not necessarily what's dripping out of it, that's dripping down to the fire pan below, but you're adding, in other words, various liquids and so forth to actually have it cook with the force of heat on the liquid that is then affecting the meat and so forth. This is not allowed. This is what is meant by that you shall not cook with liquids. The Meshorshe Mitzvah Zoh, now the logical underpinnings of this mitzvah, Masha Ketu B'Shechitato Liskor Nes Yitzia Mitzrayim. Now with all of the various mitzvot that are connected with the idea of Pesach, the number one biggest factor, biggest aspect of that mitzvah in terms of its reasoning is of course to remember the miracles of coming out of Egypt. Now, specific to this mitzvah, the idea that it needs to be roasted. And the reason is because it is the way of kings and the princes and important people that they would cook using the method of tzeli, using the method of roasting. And by the way, the way of roasting in the case of the Pesach, as we're talking here, is they would actually not roast it as you might be familiar from various pictures you might have seen, where the animal is placed on its side and is rolled. In other words, with a spit going from mouth through the end of him, but across the fire. But rather, he's actually positioned so that he's up and down on the actual spit itself. A bit different. Anyways, the idea though is this meat is there roasting on this spit straight up in the air, and the idea is the juices roll over the meat itself, giving it a fantastic flavor and of course a nice little crunchiness and so forth and so on. And this particular way of cooking is the way of kings. In fact, if you think about yourself and your life, When was the last time you actually went ahead and roasted a keves? You roasted a sheep in your backyard, for that matter, or anything else, in order to be able to enjoy it. Now, it happens to be something that most of us don't have the liberty to be able to do. Interestingly, being here in Miami is not uncommon at all, though, to find that various peoples, specifically Cubans, that are in the area, that they, as part of their happy gatherings, will actually go out and roast the whole animal on a spit. In this particular case, the idea is that, again, it's this very special way of cooking. It's a very impractical way on a small scale, and it's sort of the thing that royalty and that things are done on a big, gigantic scale. So it's the same sort of idea here. In other words, this idea of rotisserie lamb, whatever else have you, that it's certainly something done on a big scale and only on very important occasions. So this, of course, is the way that we'd like to look at, or that we need to be looking at, the idea of Pesach itself, that this is a elevation of the Jewish people from being slaves into freedom, into being the princes that the Jewish people are. So the very little bit of meat that the average person can afford and can have on his plate, the only way he can eat this is mevushal, is boiled. Because what they're looking to do is just fill their belly. In other words, they don't necessarily want to lose the various fats and nutrients that will be dripping off either. They want to have it all there in order to be able to give them the nutrients they can from the smallest pieces of meat. In many ways, we really have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the various tremendous, tremendous gifts that he's given us in this modern day, that really, seriously speaking, there's very few Jewish people that find themselves in a position where they cannot regularly have at least chicken or meat, or for that matter, cannot really be able to worry about being nutritionally starved, that they have to worry about the means by which they cook in order to do so. In fact, so rich is generally our diets that we actually concern ourselves with how to get rid of the nutrients, how to get rid of the fats and so forth, in order so that we should be able to slim down a little bit. So really, it is a tremendous shevach that the Jewish people are given this real freedom almost every place that they are. Although we can't forget for that moment, though, that there are still Jews who are located in various places, although not very talked about, that are in difficult situations and are always in need of help. Nevertheless, with that great shevach, with that great praise that's given that to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we now have this unbelievable affluence about us, we really have to make use of it in its best way. And that means to say that we need to apply ourselves with this extra ability of not having to worry about the small details of our physical existence, and really apply ourselves to our spiritual existence, now more than any other generation, any other time. It's funny, it says by Moshe Rabbeinu, that when he looked to the future generations before Mashiach, that he cried. And it's funny because there's two aspects to that. One aspect of it is that, wow, that in a generation like this they keep the Torah. When you think about how far away sometimes things are in our generation, in terms of the various strange developments and directions that people have gotten, you can certainly say, woe is me to what exists. And how can it be that anybody could be religious in a generation? On the other hand, of course, for those people that want to make use of what this generation really has to offer, there are unbelievable spiritual heights that each and every one of us can reach. We shouldn't forget that. We shouldn't forget for the moment that we really have the opportunity now and here to be able to accomplish things on such great scales. Think for a moment, sitting on my laptop, I have within it literally thousands of sfarim, thousands of books. At any given moment, I can go ahead and type in various little search words and come up with phrases throughout Shelo Petshuvot, throughout the various farm of thousands of thousands of years, and easily at your fingertips be able to learn and be able to delve into the deepest parts of Torah. Not even even disregarding the fact that the tremendous summaries of great works which have gone on over the last couple hundred years, so that easily and quickly a person can know exactly what the law is, to know exactly what he needs to be doing with his life. It's unbelievable when you think about what's available to us in our generation, and not to squander it. Truly, without any question, you can see that this is the generation that's coming towards the time of Mashiach quickly and speedily, because specifically here in this time, we have almost already an element of the world to come, the tremendous ability to not have to waste time and be able to apply ourselves. Given that it's tremendous musar, it's tremendous words of rebuke, you might say, to each and every one of us, realizing that since we have such an easy time in this generation to be able to easily find the resources to learn and to study and to grow, how much we need to reprimand ourselves for every moment that we waste and are not applying ourselves. It makes then perfect sense that the Jewish people who are coming out of Egypt, that the Pesach, which is for remembering this act of going from being a slave to going into freedom, to becoming a nation of priests, a holy nation, it is for sure proper then that we should behave as such, that the eating that we do of the Pesach offering should be in the way and manner of those that are free and those that are princes. Milvad she'achilat hatzniyore al hachipazon she'atzu mitzrayim v'lo yachlu l'shoto kidei levashlo b'gdera. That's withstanding the fact that the eating of something which is roasted shows also about what? Shows also about the quickness by which the Jewish people had to leave Egypt. That they didn't have the time to sit there and to cook down the meat, which is a much longer process than putting it on a spit in the midst of a fire. So the Rambam, who brings down this idea can teach us also something else, that we're not a bunch of criminals. If you remember what we talked about before about the concept of Malcha bin Rasai, about the idea of food that is partially cooked, and its source in terms of understanding that measurement, or the words that are used to specify that measurement, meaning that someone who was involved in criminal activity needed to go from place to place, and we look at a minimum amount of eating. The fact of the matter is while the choice of roasting may also be illustration of the fact that we're leaving Egypt quickly, that with great speed a Kadosh Baruch Hu was taking us out and bringing us to freedom, but it's also a sign of the fact that we're not criminals, meaning that we go ahead and we take our time and we fully cook our food. And in fact, for that matter, if it's rare, as this specific law, as this specific negative commandment actually teaches us, you would actually receive malchut, you would receive lashings. So it means to say quick, but not too quick, meaning with speed, but not as one who has no control, or for that matter isn't having control placed upon him. Meaning God took us out with speed, but not haphazardly, with a controlled movement, exactly the way a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. And that's an aspect of what this mitzvah teaches us. Dini ha-mitzvah, the various laws that are connected with this mitzvah, is, for example, if it's been made a pot roast, or if it's been basted with various drinks, or with fruit juices, or with mime, or water, or with oil that belongs to a kohen, meaning from the oil made from olives, the olives themselves, there needs to be a portion given to the kohanim. So if oil that has this portion taken from it has not been taken from it, was used, and various other laws along these lines, you'll find those things detailed in Gemar Pesachim. Now this applies both to men and to females. Both men and females were participating in the eating of the korban, and therefore this law, in terms of its preparation, also applies to everyone. And anybody who was to go ahead and he was to eat rare roasted meat or cooked meat, meaning cooked with liquids, as we said before, he would receive malchut, he would actually receive lashings from the Torah. Now here we're going to get into a bit of a discussion back and forth. It gets a little bit technical. We'll kind of move through it kind of quickly. Anyways, it's good to know. And according to the Rambam, if a person was to eat both raw, meaning both rare and cooked at the same time, he would only receive lashes once. Why? Because this is all one law. It's all one negative commandment. Meaning that given the situation where it says, na, in other words, raw, mevushal, or cooked, meaning both things are details of the mitzvah itself in the Torah, he would hold that a person would only receive one lash even though he ate from both meaning from both rare and from cooked meat. But Ramban Zalna, the Ramban Manotam Shnei Lavin, the Ramban classifies this as two separate negative commandments, meaning that there's one negative commandment of not eating it rare, and there's a negative commandment of not eating it cooked. And he writes that you would receive malchut, you would receive lashes in the Torah for each situation. Meaning, so if you ate it rare, or you were to eat it boiled, meaning let's say you did both of them, you would then receive two sets of lashes, one for the rare and one for the cooked. Since it writes these words, in other words, you shall not eat it except for it being roasted. Why was it necessary? I mean, he says you have to roast it. So why is it necessary to tell me that rare is a problem and also that cooking is a problem? In order to teach us that each one of the details is a separate mitzvah and therefore each one requires separate lashing. The rabbis teach us that this is the case by all the mitzvot. Shekol hanifratim mitorah echad echad vehem dvarim chalukim. So everything that is listed, and then it's detailed out in the Torah itself, in other words, one by one, and they are separate things, meaning they're not directly related to each other, and then it's not the same thing, in other words, where it's just described in different fashions, rather two distinctly different things. Nima kol echad le mitzvah echad b'cheshbon ha-mitzvot. Each one is counted as being a separate mitzvah in the counting of the 613 mitzvot. K'gon zeh d'nam v'shal. So here, for example, we have the case of rare or cooked, and since these are distinct preparations, distinct types of methods of preparation, that they, in this case, they are counted as two separate mitzvot. V'chen, now the Chinuch continues to give us some examples. Etnan u'mechir u'sor d'vash v'zulatam. So for example, the hire of a harlot or the barter of a dog, meaning the money that a harlot received as a result of her services, she are not allowed to use that now in order to make contributions and so forth. Same thing for the barter of a dog, meaning that if this money came about as a result of exchanging a dog, in other words, the money has in it a certain bizayon, a certain level of inappropriateness to it, and therefore it's not appropriate that these monies be used, you know, for the Bet Knesset, for the Bet Mikdash, and so forth, for those things which are holy. The second example is given, and no leaven and no honey, meaning two separate things cannot be used in an offering. In other words, there can't be leavening there and there can't be honey. So same thing, they're two separate mitzvot. Going back for a second, by the way, the idea of the appropriateness of the money, this is something which, again, we really need to take to heart. And the Torah really does make a distinction as to where money comes from, in that money that's going to be used for something holy really needs to come from a source that it's beheter, that's proper. You know, we don't have the concept of doing money laundering using the Bet HaKnesset, using the shul. Meaning, if you have money and it comes from an inappropriate source, God forbid that a person is involved in such a thing, it's not appropriate that this be used in the Bet HaKnesset. In fact, for that matter, the Bet HaKnesset itself should also investigate to some degree, where is this money coming from? Monies which come from an inappropriate source are inappropriate to be used. The one example of that, historically speaking, is in Egypt. It happened, I know for a fact historically, that the chief rabbi in Alexandria one time specifically refused for money to be contributed from a particular family because the money was coming from a illegal source. He says straight out, he says the Torah is not the place for applying these monies, meaning these monies are of an improper state. These monies are not appropriate for anything for that matter, and certainly not for being used in the Bet Knesset. So when a person thinks about, by the way, where things are coming from, it's important. Think about it in terms of your own spiritual growth and things that you're looking to move forward with in everything in your life. You always want to make sure that you start with something which is good, and then you'll end with something that's good. If you start out with something tainted, don't expect in the end that things are going to turn out okay. When a person is looking for his prospective bride or his prospective husband, look for someone who's good. Look for the right thing. Now, there's always tshuva. There's no question about that. And that's always possible. And that goes without saying. But when you're looking and you look at the state that exists now and see what's in front of you, always make sure you start off on the right foot, and then the end will be on a greater foot. Now, there is a distinction regarding malkut, regarding the lashings. In other words, in a situation where you have various details of a mitzvah, which are distinct in their content, put together, where we said that they are counted as separate mitzvot, but regarding the lashes that you receive, there is a difference. And shekol nifratim b'lav echad, that everything which is counted in one lav, and lokin alem elam malkut echad, that even though there might be multiple details, meaning multiple specific mitzvot, or meaning details connected to this mitzvah, and we said that they're counted as separate mitzvot, but there's only one set of lashes that are given for the whole situation. Kigon, and the examples that we gave before, kigon etnan zona umechir kelev, for example, again, the hire of a harlot, or the sale of a dog, or dvash, or leaven and honey, and so forth, mishpat ger yatom, or for that matter, that the person should not pervert the justice that's due to a stranger or to an orphan. V'kiyotz behem kulan, meaning that if a person had a situation where it was an orphan who also happens to be a foreigner, that he would only receive one set of lashes, not multiple sets, for his perversion of justice in this particular case. So now, if you have a negative commandment, okay, like I said, this is a little bit technical, we'll still run through it. He says that if you have a negative commandment, now you have there a general concept, and before the general concept you have a detail, and after the general concept you have a detail. So again, so it's detail, general concept, detail. Kegon de alav shepurat na ushal. So for example, in our case, you have the specific situation where you have a, in other words, you have a combination of al tocham imenu na ushal ushal b'mayim ki'im tzli'esh, and then various other details that again that are continuing afterwards. In other words, that the idea is that a person has a sandwich situation where the details sandwich the concept of autochukim tzliish, that it can only be eaten, again, that the roasted. V'chen b'nazir kolel, for example, by the nazir you have a similar situation. Mikol asher yitze megefen ayayin lo yuchal, from all that is that comes from the grapevine, he says you don't eat it. And afterwards, porat haritzanim, vizag, vanavim, lachim, v'yashim. Then afterwards, there's details. I mean, pressed grapes, grape seeds, fresh and dried grapes, and so forth. So again, you see, you have a sandwich effect in this situation. Be'elu v'kiyotz behen, lokin aleim al kol echad ve'chad. On this, things change, meaning that each one would actually receive malkut for each one of the details. Ki riboy haprat shelo hayatzarich, because here details were added that were not necessary. Yore al malkut al kol echad ve'chad kmo she'amarnu. So since the details are numerous, they receive latches for each detail because they've been separately bought out, and they wouldn't have been necessary because they're all included in the general concept. Mizeshem marati Ramban zal. So that which the Chinuch tells us regarding the Ramban, ibne kol anif. So in this specific idea, meaning the Rav, meaning the Rambam, in his ninth principle regarding the Sefer Mitzvot, he goes ahead and he talks about the collection together of the counting of the negative commandments. So therefore, he says that the counting of the negative commandments are not necessarily connected to the number of lashes that exist for going and violating that specific mitzvah. V'zeh shamati Ramban zal yimnei kol anifturim b'shmam echad echad mitzvah b'vnei atzma dafka k'shem chalukim b'inyan k'mo shekatavnu k'gon tzor dvash v'etnan u'chir. Now, the Ramban, when he says that you count each one separately, that really was only talking about in a situation where the contents were distinctly different. So, for example, when you're talking about leavening versus leavening and honey, and it's in the same specific negative commandment, they're two completely separate things. Or, for example, the idea of the harlot's money and the barter of a dog, they're two, you know, there might be some underlying principles, but they're two separate concepts, two separate pieces of content and therefore actually count it separately in that case. Counts here one mitzvah with two possible malkut. Well, here you have a case of two mitzvah and two malkut. So there's that difference between them. Above a mitzvah achad. Now, let's say you have many details and one general concept again. But all of them are the same content. Could go on kol habechor asher yivaled bikorcha ubetzoncha, every firstborn of herd or flock. It's only a clarification. She'ein ze'el of tzav'a achad lahakdish kol bechor ve'aprat ein ve'el be'or. Meaning that this idea that you have to take out the firstborn. It's, in other words, this case, it's just a clarification of firstborn of what? Meaning of herds and flocks and so forth. In other words, it's not meant to be taken as separate mitzvot here. V'chan kol ma'aser bekar utzon, and taking a tithe of every of bekar utzon, meaning of the various cattle and sheep and so forth. She'ein ze'el tzava achad lafishat ma'aser ve'emodel, meaning that you have to give 1/10 of these animals. And these are just details to the mitzvah, as opposed to distinctly different mitzvot. V'chen shoftin v'shotrin, and so when it says also that judges and enforcers of the court. It just means to say that the people of this caliber are the ones that are going to perform the specific law. Again, it's not separate halachot, separate mitzvot. It's just, again, it's one general concept. For example, the pasuk that tells us just scales, just weights, just ephan, just hin, that's what you should have. Meaning that in all these cases, we're talking about the fact that you can't have bad weights. Meaning that you have to be accurate and honest in what you're doing in terms of business, in terms of life, in terms of everything for that matter. But the point is, meaning that in this situation is such that it's all the same concept, being accurate with your weights when you're dealing in business. And it doesn't necessarily mean to detail that these separate ideas, meaning different types of weight, different scales and so forth, that all of them are their own mitzvah. Yeah, with that, we actually conclude the seventh mitzvah. And the general concept of counting of the negative commandments. So with this last mitzvah now, we'll get into Shelo lahotir mibasara pesach, that you should not leave over, in other words, you shouldn't have leftovers from the Pesach offering. Shelo lahotir klum mibasara pesach l'machorato shuyom chamisha asar b'nisan. I mean, you don't leave over from the Pesach offering to the next day, which is the 15th of Nisan, Shneemar, v'lo titiru menu ad boker. You shouldn't leave it over until the morning. Meaning that it has to be eaten during the evening. In fact, if you recall, in many times, perhaps in your synagogue, they may be announcing what time chatzot, what time midnight is, for the halachic middle of the night, that people should eat their afikomen, that they should eat the last bit of matzah, meaning that's part of the Seder itself, before that time. The idea being that the afikomen, that the piece of matzah that a person is eating at that time, that afikomen is in place of the Pesach, is in place of the eating of the Pesach offering, that unfortunately, because of our current state, meaning with the Chorban, with the destruction of the Holy Temple that we are in now, that we unfortunately don't have the ability to act, to fulfill this mitzvah physically and with our own hands to go and to slaughter the animals and have them offered and so forth. That given that's the case, it says that we eat the avikomen in its place, and therefore not eat and eat, making sure to eat it before midnight to be able to prevent this from happening, meaning that it will go over into the morning with not having been eaten, meaning symbolically just like the Pesach, which there is a strict mitzvah that under no circumstances can this pass into the morning, which in that case a person would be over, he would be violating v'lo tatiru mimeinu ad boker, that you shall not leave it until the morning. Meshorshei mitzvah zo. Now, so what's the underpinnings of this mitzvah? Ma shekatu b'shkitato liskor nisei Mitzrayim. So again, it's the same idea. It's remembering the miracles of Egypt. So this is directly connected to what was brought down, and we talk about the shechita, the slaughtering of the Pesach, of the Passover offering. Now, on top of that, v'zeishin itztavenu shelo la'atir mimenu, when it says that you shouldn't leave over from it, ha'inyan hu kederach melachim v'sarim. This is connected to the very much to the idea of the last thing that we just saw, which is that this is the way of the kings and princes. She'enu tzrichin la'atir mitavshanim yom yom, meaning that people on that level, they don't eat leftovers. In other words, they don't need to retaste something which is already passed across their table. When they're done with something, they just get rid of it. While Ken Amar Shim Yotimeno, Shisraf Kadavar Shain Chevetz Bo Kider Machia Adama. So just like the kings that we find in this world, that when they are done with their food, they just go ahead and they burn it up like something which has no special rules. So there's an idea in general, by the way, that this applies to, again, in our personal lives, and that has to do with the idea of leftovers in general. Now, certainly, of course, you know, when we're not celebrating the Chag, certainly we can eat leftover food. I mean, thank God also, again, the many benefits of refrigeration mean that a person can enjoy Shabbat Chont, you know, all the way into the week. I'm not sure who'd want to do that, but I certainly know people that do. Not for me. But anyways, the idea, though, is that leftovers are appropriate. Actually, now that we're talking about leftovers and Shabbat, one of the things that I had told my wife when we were engaged, that I have a way to beat the system. So how do you beat the system? So it says that everything which a person prepares for Shabbat, meaning all the investment of funds that he makes into this preparations of Shabbat, also included in that is all the preparations a person makes for the teaching of his children, that in both of these cases, that money doesn't come from his yearly allotment. Meaning to say that if it's said in Shemaim he's going to make $80,000 a year, that even if he spends the money, on Shabbat, and he spends the money on Chinuch, on teaching his children, that on those two situations it doesn't come off the 80 grand that he's supposed to get for the course of the year. Meaning that there will be some way that it will be supplemented and everything will work out, that what he's supposed to get, he will supposed to get, and this doesn't come across. So I said to my wife, you know what? I have a great idea. Why not, we go ahead and we prepare a massive banquet for Friday night and for Shabbat morning, and for Surah Shishit for that matter. And the rest of the week we go ahead and we eat all the leftovers. And that way, by eating all the leftovers, we beat the system. We never actually have to take a dime out of our pocket, basically, for all our food expenses. It's a great idea. Unfortunately, I didn't like the leftovers too much. That's a bad meter. That's not a good thing. In the sense that, in other words, to be so picky when it comes to food is not necessarily a real positive type of thing. So, nevertheless, though, here the idea of a king, that he's not certainly not going to be eating leftovers, and the idea of burning it again, leaving its chashivut. Now, leftovers, though, what do you do with them when you don't want them? Well, that's really where the question comes. The idea we've already talked about in the beginning of this year, about the idea that you take something which is mundane and you raise through, elevate them through adding some sort of tikkun, some sort of order to them, that came by way of your physical actions on this food or whatever is going on. You give it something and you invest within it so that this should be something spiritual. Or for that matter, that should be used for something for man when it came from the level of animal or from the level of plant and so forth and so on. And the idea is that once you've elevated something, there's a concept that once something has been made holy, you can't make it profane. Once something has come to the level of food for a man, can't be made food for an animal. See, even though we have an obligation to take care of any animals that happen to be under our care, for example, a person might have a dog, and that's a question in itself. You have a dog now, putting all that aside, you have a dog one way or the other, you're responsible now to take care of that animal. You can't just throw the food scraps off your table for it to eat. And the reason is very simple, that food has been elevated. It's man food, it's human food. In other words, it has a special status. And you can't be mavazi, you can't degrade the food that you have. You got to treat it specially. For that matter, a person might have breadcrumbs on his table and things along those lines. It's a great idea, breadcrumbs that you have, you want to go ahead and give it to the animals, meaning you want to give it to the birds and so forth, because you don't want to throw out bread for sure, bread which represents your parnasa, represents your livelihood. This is not something you just want to throw out the door. Nevertheless, a person has to be careful regarding all these things. So what then does a person do? Well, first of all, unfortunately, there are plenty that are in need. And certainly it's appropriate where possible, provided the food is still good and fresh and can be presentable, that it should be given to somebody who needs it. If you're not going to eat it, at least give it to somebody who will eat it, somebody who will make use of that food somebody who will invest the energy in that food into something good. Torah mitzvot, learning and so forth, doing good deeds, making a change in the world. But beyond that, what happens then if you still have food, or the food is not so presentable? What do you do then? Again, you can't just throw the food to the animals. It doesn't work that way. This food is special. It has gone through a process of being on the table of a Jew. Something more has to happen to this food. So what happens then is, if the food is not going to be eaten, the food is laid aside. It's laid aside for spoilage. When the food is no longer something which a person would eat, in other words, it's moldy, is this, is that, then a person, again, he gets rid of it, meaning he throws it away or gives it to the animals or whatever else have you, meaning it's not human food anymore. Something to keep in mind, meaning to say that what you use for something positive continues on a positive track. It means to say that if you go to your work, you want your work to be positive? Real good. Put positive into it. Meaning, invest within everything you do, Torah and mitzvot. Invest within it something positive, and positive will be its ultimate come, and it won't fall down, it won't move to the side of negativity. And be careful that when you have something positive, that you don't let it slip into something negative.
וכל זה לזכור ולקבוע בלב שבאותו זמן גלנו השם יפרח ונעשינו בני חורין וזכינו למחות ולגדולה.
And all of this is in order for us to remember and to affix within our heart that at that time when God took us out of Egypt, He made us into free men and He gave us the merit to be kings and great. Don't waste your opportunity. It's a gift. A gift to be able to transcend the world and to invest everything with a sense of holiness.
Din mitzvah b'psachim, the various laws that are connected to this are found in Gemara Psachim. V'nagi b'zacharim v'nekavod b'zman abayit, and it is customary, meaning that this is, we need to observe this specific mitzvah, be it by males or by females, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when korbanot are done, God willing, speedily it will be rebuilt. Va'over aleha v'hotir avar alav, anybody who would leave over from the flesh of the Pesach until the next day, he would be violating this negative commandment. Ve'en lokin alav zeh lefishu nitak la'aseh. Now, the idea is that there is a positive commandment, in other words, connected in the same part of the negative commandment. So when that happens, in that situation, then there's no malkut, meaning it's considered to be a stringency which you must hold upon yourself, and it's considered to be more stringent or having a more difficult effect upon you and your soul in terms of a positive commandment, meaning in terms of punishment, but less than a negative commandment, or worse than that, a negative commandment that has an active part to it. And the halacha is in general that anytime you have, again, a positive mitzvah that's connected with a negative mitzvah, situations that there is no malkut, again, there is no court punishments of malkut, that doesn't mean to say that there is no punishment from the heavens and that it has no effect on you and who you are, just that it doesn't come before the courts. God willing, each and every one of us will make use of the tremendous opportunities of our lives, the tremendous wealth that modern day has afforded us. And when I say wealth, put even money aside, just wealth of information. The fact that I can literally have thousands of sfarim sitting in my house, and at any point I can grab one, or that I can have thousands of sfarim sitting in a computer and I can just pull out anything I want. The fact that you can have Torah anytime you want by phoning in to anybody, or by picking up and looking on the internet, in any of those situations, it's a tremendous thing to realize that Torah can be introduced to you faster than ever before. It can be streamed into your brain almost. So God willing, each of us, as we kind of connect ourselves into the cyber century, God willing, as we grow with this, speedily, God willing, we'll see Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mehrav yameinu. Amen.